So here we are again, eh? It's been a while.
Is this season 7?
I believe so.
I think it's 7.
Series 7.
I think we're one more than Sopranos now. Yeah. I think so.
And we ended the last season with that. Did Henry or did Henry not get shot?
Yeah.
And it turns out he didn't. He's back.
Yeah. But yeah, well, speculation has been rife, hasn't it?
Can we build to a big cliffhanger at the end of this season? Series.
Well, I don't know what the difference is between those two things. Serial.
Ooh. Sequence of aliquots.
What the fuck is...
What's an aliquot?
It's a small clay home. Isn't it?
Lived in by a goat with opposable hooves.
Exactly. It's the only example of roofed structures built by goats that we know of.
And it is contentious, sure.
Yeah.
And they also came up with the idea of a television programme that continues the following week rather than resolving within its own episode. Is that what you're saying?
Goats. Well, I mean, if you've ever seen one of them walking pretty much on vertical areas of granite.
It's 100% cliffhangers.
Thanks very much. And we're off. Season 7. Let's go. Let's go. Oh, it's like getting into a warm bath with two friends. And we've all been in the bath together for almost a year.
And it's getting a bit cold now, isn't it?
We're getting quite cold.
We've thick layer of suds resting on the top.
Yeah.
Don't know whose hairs are whose sticking on the side of the bath.
There's a kind of rainbow effect you get from a lot of oil. There's a kind of oily rainbow sheen on top of the water, isn't there, sitting there? There are some fart bubbles. The water is so thick and oily now that the fart bubbles remain. they remain. They don't burst, so that you could see them. They're a bit like bubble tea. Have you ever seen a glass of bubble tea?
Well, which means we all have to stay very, very still, or they could all burst at once, and we're all dead.
Yeah. If the algae content is such that people have started reintroducing rare forms of pike back into the baths now,
which has been really lovely to see, hasn't it?
Oh, it's great to see the fisheries finally thriving.
It's been lovely to see the tiger pike, the rhino pike, the trout pike,
frolicking and gamboling through the waters.
That's right.
And of course, in order to create a fully hermetically sealed ecosystem, we're inside a big glass cloche. Mm. So it's like a terrarium.
And people can buy tickets to that cloche because it's glass see-through and just observe what's going on as a sort of social experiment. Really.
Well, it's actually hard to see in there because there's so much steam. It's so steamed up. I mean, if you think you know steamed up, think again, because this is next level, isn't it?
Well, it's very much like that scene in Titanic where they're having sex in a car in the galley and then... Her hand slaps up against the cold glass
in the galley.
I
didn't realise that was in a galley. There's so many notes to that film. I didn't realise.
Is galley the wrong word?
I think that's the kitchen, isn't it?
The galley. Oh, it wasn't in the kitchen.
Someone parked their car. There were a lot of posh people on the boat, though, to be fair. And the posh people will park their car bloody anywhere these days.
They'll park their Model T Ford anywhere.
In a ship's kitchen. As it's about to set sail.
Why do I think the galley means something other than a kitchen?
It might be because I'm wrong. I don't know.
That scene is the only scene, isn't it, where the film Titanic and what happened on that fated vessel. His shadow, I think, still looms over all of us, doesn't it, today? But yeah, it's one of the only scenes where it's actually like very much like what you'd see on any cross-channel ferry, isn't it? It's people fucking in a parked car. You know what?
off to the end of a booze cruise. Been over to Calais, fill up the car with tiny bottles of lager.
Yeah.
And then...
And then it's just, do we watch what film have they got?
It's an Asterix one.
Let's go back to the carport and rut.
Let's just...
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content. Content.
Content. Hey! Let's just bone in the car and... We can try that position you were going to try where you
you put a bottle of lager over us. One of those tiny little stubby ones.
You try and put a really, really tiny bottle of very, very cheap, weak French lager up your ass. I've never seen the film Titanic, Ben. So, you know, when you mentioned that scene just now.
What? You've talked about it at length on at least 17 occasions on this podcast.
No, so you had a whole episode about the Titanic. And you didn't mention that you hadn't seen the movie.
I think. Well, the film's never as good as the real thing, is it?
As the book,
as the book,
as the novel it comes from,
as the novel it comes from. Now, I tell you what. Well, the Titanic is one of those films which I couldn't tell you for sure. If you'd asked me an hour ago, I couldn't have told you with 100% certainty whether or not I'd seen the film Titanic. So if that was a clinching thing in a big legal case, that'd be quite tense because I wouldn't. If I had to. I'd be like, on the day, I'd be like, I'm pretty sure I've seen it. But then when I had the pen in my hand on a Bible, various oaths being sworn, do you know what
What's
I mean?
What's the pen for?
Yeah, you don't sign the Bible.
No, I'm just a man who likes to carry a pen. Titanic is, there's a category of film which is, and I think a lot of people have this, I'm not sure whether I've seen it or not, because I've heard so much about it. People often describe it very vividly.
There's a cultural awareness of it. Yeah.
There's a cultural awareness of it.
I've got this with Crocodile Dundee, which I've never seen, but I'm
okay, sure. You sort of pieced it together with a series of GIFs and memes. Is that what you've done?
I've pieced it together, and the brain does this. It's brilliant. It's pieced it together with GIFs and memes, half-remembered, you know, overheard snatches of conversation on buses, the 2 week skiing holiday I went on with James Cameron.
You've got to be able to talk a good game on those holidays. You can't admit that you haven't seen it on those.
No, exactly.
You've just got to, you have to be ready. You've got to
bloody wing it.
And you always, I know it, it's like you always plan to, I've got to make sure I've seen the whole back catalogue before I go because he's going to want to talk about it. He's going to want to know what thoughts are. But I've just, and then you never get around to it. And then all of a sudden your flight's departing and you're
just hoping upon hope that the in-flight movie is Titanic.
Yeah. Also, when you get on the skiing holiday with James Cameron, it's quite boring, actually, because you've got to do the whole bloody thing on blue slopes because you're so bloody obsessed with Avatar. Yeah? Season 7?
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, it's all right, isn't it? It's not.
Hopla.
Hey! by the way, quickly, guess what? The other day, this is huge, right? This has crept up on us, and no one's warned us. There's been nothing in the press. I watched a film the other day in the cinema, and there was a trailer for
Avatar 2.
Avatar 2. Have you seen it?
No.
I've not seen the trailer. I'm aware that it's on its way, though.
So the trailer.
I wouldn't say I'm excited.
I think it's December. I think it's this. It might, in fact, it may be
Christmas.
This holiday season. It's
how better to celebrate?
You've missed them. We've all missed them.
Yeah. You've forgotten about them. So have some of us on the team, in fact. But I'm just reading a script here.
Is it pivotal that we remember who everyone was and what happened at the end of it and all that stuff?
Because
they might be in big trouble if that's the case.
Not really, I think, Mike, because based on the trailer, it's exactly the same film.
Oh, fine. That helps.
I mean, nothing seems to have changed particularly.
That helps.
They might have to do a thing where you go in and it goes, previously on Avatar. And then they show you the entire of Avatar.
The whole of Avatar. Well, I tell you what happened was, when the trailer came on, it's so weird to have a film where the sequel is... I think I felt that most of the people in the audience didn't even have a particular cultural reference for Avatar, so it wasn't even a big deal because basically what I sensed was a palpable lack of awe at everything that was happening on the screen. Because it's one of those moments where it's like, you know, this, I think presumably what Cameron wants is for people to be like, what the... And like to push their loved ones aside, maybe drop a babe from the teat.
Yeah,
you know, into a box of popcorn, like people to just sort of drop everything they were doing, which to be fair should have been just looking at the screen anyway. But
some trailers are perfect sort of final panic wee bog rush opportunities, aren't they? It sounds like maybe that was one of them.
Yeah, to be honest, it really didn't. There was just something. Because it had the usual thing that trailers have, you know, sweeping shots and kind of like music that was everything was supposed to be like, or. Grandeur.
Did it begin with some haunting indigenous music?
It was like playing shuffle in Peter Gabriel's car. Music wise. It was pan pipes, it was global uplift. That would be the mood
And then it turns.
And then it turns. Yeah. But it didn't even particularly turn. You know what it felt like? It felt like a sort of holiday ad for a country that, for a holiday you just sort of don't really fancy.
It'll take 15,000 years to get to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a real bollock if you've got small kids, let me tell you.
Yeah. And the jet lag. I mean, we're talking 6 years to get over that jet lag, which people don't have time for that length of a holiday, do they? Plus it's 15 years to get there and back anyway. So you have to go to cryogenic storage. I mean, the whole thing's, it's not worth it, darling.
There's also the jet lag-like feeling you get when you get entirely converted into CGI and back again.
Yeah, that's not...
It's a horrible... It's like a 10-day hangover.
Yeah. And also... The fact is, you just want to go on the holiday, right? So the holiday version of the Avatar experience is you stay in the military compound, you maybe go out in a chopper every now and then and like...
Shoot a blue thing.
shoot some blue stuff. Then you're back in the compound by 6 for a buffet foot rub.
There's a bit of a cabaret show, something light cabaret in the early show. Evening for the kids, yeah. A bit bluer.
Yeah.
Appropriately in the evening.
Yeah.
Play the national anthem. Everyone stands up for the national anthem and goes to bed. That's it.
Yeah. But so that's the holiday you want. But what happens is you inevitably end up falling in with the blue resistance movement, and you're supposed to be relaxing for your job. Yeah. Actually, you're now with the blue people.
You're sabotaging helicopters right, left, and centre.
Sabotaging helicopters.
You're largely missing the cabaret acts, which you're paying for.
Yeah. Because you're printing out propaganda leaflets, which you're also paying for.
Yeah. You're having to execute the maitre d' of the hotel who actually plumped your pillows for you. Sorry, you plumped them in front of you. Is that what maitre d' does? What's the maitre d' do?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
What's the future?
Is that why you're executing it? It's got complicated all of a sudden. It feels like he's really zeroed in on this poor guy.
Well, this is the thing, Mike. You don't want complication. You're on holiday.
Ugly things happen, I guess, in these situations like this.
Exactly. And eventually, you're sabotaging the intergalactic vessel that's supposed to be taking you back home. the point I was making, though, sorry to go back, was the fact that the Titanic is one of those films where I think a lot of people probably aren't sure whether they've seen it or not, because it's in the culture so much. Also, it's on TV so much. Or it has been that I've channel hop to it and watch large chunks. I've watched large chunks of the film. But what happens is, so you know, if you'd asked me this morning, I'd have said I probably have seen it. But then what happens every now and then is someone will refer to a scene in Titanic. I've got no idea what they're talking about. That happened with you, Ben. You said a scene where they're having sex in a car. I genuinely thought you were joking. I thought, how the hell has that happened in Titanic? Because I've seen Titanic and that didn't happen.
You don't remember Steven Seagal having sex at all during the scene. How's he having sex if he's in the middle of killing some terrorists who've taken over the Titanic? It doesn't make any sense at all.
Exactly. He hasn't got time for that. I didn't realize it happened. And then is there a bit of steam and a hand goes on the window, does it?
This is an iconic moment in the film, maybe the most iconic, which is that there's a steamy car window and then Winslet's hand slaps up against it.
In a moment of pure ecstasy. Leo's hit the spot, basically.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
And basically she's getting that kind of dirty lower deck sex that she's never been able to have in her upper class life.
Right, yeah, because she's had the kind of sex she's had is the kind of sex where everything's got a doily under it. Literally.
There are at least four ladies in waiting in attendance throughout.
Yeah, and everyone's wearing a petticoat. Everyone involved.
You can't see a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Both of your mothers and fathers are there.
And a doctor.
With a set of calibrated specula. Measuring everything in great detail and documenting the whole thing.
That's right. There's a phrenologist.
who's doing bollock phrenology.
There's a bollock. There's a bollock phrenologist, and it's incredibly difficult work because he's got to work with bollocks are in motion, so he's in motion himself.
Each nut have contrasting data as well.
Well, that's why there's two rival bollock phrenologists, and they're both sort of in a kind of I don't know, they're sort of swinging, aren't they? They're both in a kind of device that swings. So they're doing phrenology on the move, which is very, very difficult. There'll be a harpist. And the only thing that is quite nice is halfway through there'll be French fancies will come out. Everyone will be able to have a French fancy.
That's true. Someone will be in the corner with a set of dueling pistols just in case.
That's right.
Pete Tong.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end, a big gammon pie is brought out.
Yes. And it's the opposite, isn't it, of bursting out of a cake, which is the couple, the happy couple, then have to burst into the pie.
Get in the ham.
Get in the ham. And it's a historical thing to do with hiding their shame. Yeah. The parents will start wailing. The boy phrenologists normally then end up in a fight, don't they? But then drinking and drowning their sorrows together.
Tough times.
Yeah.
Tough times.
But in Titanic, what they do is there's a moment where they signify how she has like fallen from her lofty sort of class. There's a bit where she meets some Irish people and that... Mm.
Because they're poor but happy.
Yeah. Exactly. Poor but happy. Dancing.
Squalid conditions, but they're dancing a jig.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a really subtle, textured piece of social commentary.
It really is, isn't it?
She dances a jig. And that she's ready to go. Then all they've got to do now is find somewhere where someone's left a car, which ordinarily would be quite hard on a boat, but on this one, their luck was in.
I can't remember if that's pre or post the other iconic scene, Henry, which is when the saber-toothed tiger escapes.
That's right. Up through one of the iconic chimneys, isn't it?
Yeah. One of the chimneys starts just producing. It turns out it's a portal to another time. And
and it says... Just saber-tooth tiger after saber-tooth tiger after saber-tooth tiger.
They're taking on Dwayne the Rock Johnson, who's emerging from the sea, who's half fish, half scorpion.
That's right.
That's a great scene.
Oh, what I was going to say is, I'm not sure if it's before or after the iconic scene. You must have seen this one, where she gets naked and he draws her.
Yeah, I've heard about that one.
Right. Oh, come on.
Draw me like one of your French girls, is what she says.
Is that what she says?
Yeah.
Is she talking to Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec at that point?
She's talking to Thierry Henry. French football star.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, to save the Titanic, isn't it, at the end, they just need... Do they need a big spurt of power to get through the iceberg? And they just need one large, round chunk of coal, but it has to be transported from one end of the ship to the other, doesn't it, to get down the engines. Mm. So Thierry Henry has to dribble it. They need the fastest dribbler in the football scene in Europe. And he dribbles, doesn't he? He does kicky uppies and like lobs it over some sort of posh, snooty people and nutmegs a couple of sort of deckhands.
And then just smashes it right into the boiler. So,
So it's like, too late, as we know, tragically.
Yeah. So there's a scene where he draws... Does she say, draw me like one of your French girls?
Yeah, I think that's the famous quote, isn't it?
So he draws French girls, does he? He's been in the
habit of drawing French girls, I think, is the thing. That's what he's...
Is that his thing? That's his hobby, is it? Or is it his job?
It's a job.
I think hobby.
So I don't know why I'm talking about it as if she's my daughter and I'm this is a prospective partner. So tell me about this, sir.
So that's your job, is it? Drawing French women?
This is the problem. I mean, I would much rather watch that film where someone does, you know, scrutinise this scene. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's actually going on here? Her auntie Jean comes in and says, well, what do you mean? Who are these French girls? Is this a professional arrangement? What's the, you know?
Yeah, what's going on here?
I think he might be an American guy who's like living on his wits. And he's spent a bit of time in Paris. And, you know, he's a bit of this, a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he gets his ticket to the Titanic by gambling at the beginning. I think he wins
There's definitely some sort of hijinks or japes or trickery or something.
Okay, yeah.
And probably, I don't know, I don't remember because it's been a long time, probably a scene where he has to leave a grimy bar in a bit of a hurry.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And they're always great scenes, those scenes.
Great
scenes. The beginnings of films. You know where you are. Oh, he's a bit of a scamp, this one.
What, what's his character called? Do you know? Do you remember?
Jack.
Jack, is it?
Jack.
Well, Jack Frost in the last scene, from what I remember.
You've not seen it, Henry. Stop trying to make out you've seen Titanic.
He freezes up at the end, doesn't he?
He does. He does fall into the sea. Well, she essentially pushes him into the sea.
Well, she keeps him, because he's so poor and below her class, isn't it? That's why at the end she goes, what have I been doing?
And she writes the social order.
She really comes to her senses, and drops him into the sea.
And they kept him frozen, didn't they? Just in case for a sequel or whatever, because he could in theory be defrosted, but they never.
There's still time. The rate that James Cameron's going, there's still time.
He could be defrosted in the Avatar universe.
Well, he'd be blue as well. That's where Avatar. That was the idea. Avatar was originally the sequel to Titanic, which is he gets defrosted. He's blue. He's bright blue. And they nailed the blue technology, but actually they thought people weren't really interested in Titanic anymore, so they just tweaked it.
The smallest of tweaks.
The smallest of tweaks.
Okay, time to turn on the bean machine. Okay, so this week's topic, as sent in by Michael from Bremen.
Hello.
Is animal husbandry.
Oh.
Well, what is animal husbandry again?
Yeah, that's my question.
Isn't it just quite an ancient term for just looking after an animal? I mean, if you're looking after rearing chickens, aren't you doing some chicken husbandry?
You are a chicken husband.
You are a chicken husband. But, crucially, those chickens are not, they're not your hen wives.
It goes one way, is what you're saying.
That's the key difference. It's a unilateral marriage.
And I tell you what, especially, you know, good luck with that, calling a hen your wife, because if you've met some of these hens these days, these girls are absolutely, they're independent, they're full of energy and ideas, they're eggs, they've got a lot of eggs. But they're absolutely, they're nobody's mugs. I tell you what, they are not. Do you know what I mean? They're really going places. And absolutely good luck to them. Actually, hats off. Because these hens, if you see them, they're clucking around, they're walking around the fields or the barnyard area. They don't care. Do you know what I mean? They are strutting it, girl. And you, yeah? You better don't you worry about it, yeah?
So, Henry, is your idea of feminism that...
Inspiring
is your
stuff,
idea of feminism, Henry, that if women, to quote you directly, are full of ideas... then they won't get married.
What? I'm sorry, I'm talking about hens. I'm talking about hens.
Oh, okay. Sure.
I'm talking about hens. I have no idea what you're on about.
Welcome to the Flightless Bird Zone.
No, please, not my face! I'm saying that these hens have got they're going places. They're pecking on their own schedule. They're pecking here, they're pecking there. You can't tell a hen where to peck. And also they are, a lot of them will choose to eat seeds now or a bit later, or often just as and when. Do you know what I mean? It's very loose. It's very
ad hoc, isn't it? It's very ad hoc life.
It's very ad hoc. It's very unconstricted. It's very modern and absolutely great. And I think it's absolutely great. I just want to say that.
Thanks, Henry.
No worries.
But that's in complete contrast, of course, to hogs, for example.
Oh, hogs.
Yeah, I do get him started on sows.
They do not know what they're doing. I mean, they are an absolute disgrace. They're literally wandering around. They'll often walk into barn doors or reverse out of a barn when they're trying to go in the barn. Honestly, they don't know what they're doing. They'll get into bed and they'll go, oh, I'm all nice and warm for the night. You're in the trough. You don't know what you're doing. You've got in the trough. Do you know what I mean? So it really is horses for courses. What I will say about hens is it's all very well wandering around the barnyard looking for seeds and so on, but at night you want to get in that hutch and you want to lock that door because there are foxes about.
I live in an area where you don't have to go too far to find people who keep chickens in their back gardens.
Really?
Yeah. It's that kind of place. I've got a couple of friends who do it. In fact, the chickens become, you know, that thing where people get pets to teach their children about death.
Sure.
I've never particularly bought into, but that's very much the vibe.
It's that traditional thing, is it? Where you, it's a very traditional thing. So you just to fill in listeners who don't know about this habit, it might be a British thing. What you do is you buy your child a rabbit, call it something like Flossie. And on Christmas Day, you bring the rabbit in, the child meets the rabbit, bonds with the rabbit, and then you erect either a small gallows or a mini shooting, as a kind of, where you can choose, because the pet shops will sell you different, you can either have a mini gallows, you can obviously, you can bring in a court-martial style shooting kit they give you, isn't there?
The firing squad.
Well, it's a firing. Yeah, it's a miniature firing squad.
Yeah, it's up to you what judicial system you impose upon that rabbit. Yeah, yeah, it might be a court martial. It might be a civil process. It might be summary. I mean, who knows? You know,
a sort of angry civilians kangaroo court is quite good.
Could be a lynch mob, exactly. Yeah,
You can have that. Yeah, it could be a lynch mob. There's various different kits.
Lynch mob of hamsters.
Yeah. Yeah, then you issue child with a miniature shovel. You then send the child into the garden to...
So they learn about mortality. And they learn about the fragility of society.
That's right.
And the social contract.
Yeah.
And the difference between laws and justice.
That's right.
That's true. But that's that seems to be the main purpose of the chickens. The hit rate, the fox hit rate is massive. Oof. From what I can gather. They're rampant around our way.
Yeah.
Foxes.
London foxes are getting more and more... They're straggly as hell. I mean, the London... I imagine, Mike, our foxes look very different to your foxes.
Oh, ours are sleek and glossy. And quite hench on the whole.
Yeah, yeah. They're the sort of foxes that would pop up on a YouTube ad saying, "You want my life? You can have it."
And yeah, because they've sworn by some sort of extraordinary diet where they only eat sort of filled dog poo bags, something like that, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm keeping it simple now. It's protein, it's fat rich, but carb light. It's bags of dog turd.
And they get up early. They get up super early. They're very much like tech millionaires, aren't they? A lot of their lifestyle things. They get up super early. They eat almost exclusively bags of untreated, uncooked dog shit. No, but the ones in London look so straggly. They look like they've been just sort of, they've been on a stag do for about 5 years. they just look absolutely fucked. But often the bushy tail isn't bushy anymore. It's lost its bushiness, you know, like...
Yeah.
It's
just like a wet thing they're kind of dragging behind them.
But actually what happens is when you see a fox in London, there's this moment where, you know, you catch their eye and there's a kind of... There is a reaching out between the species moment I quite enjoy, of being close to something that wild.
That thing of looking at a fox and having that moment of connection... I very much had a few years ago when I was living in South London, and I came out of my bedroom, walked down the landing, and there was a fox in my house.
Ooh,
someone had left the back door open.
Was one of your housemates Joanna Lovely?
Is she pro fox?
She's got a fox that comes into her house.
Has she?
She's trained a fox to come into her house and have cuddles.
Well, yeah, mine, the one that was in my house didn't cuddle me. It literally just pissed in my shoes.
Ah, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
While you were wearing them?
No. It found a pair of my shoes and literally just pissed directly into both shoes, ate a bag of mine, and then...
A bag of your shit?
Yes, I provided it with a bag of my shit.
Yeah. You hang them on little hooks, don't you, up and down the stairs to ward off evil spirits, but to attract foxes, it turns out. That's the give and take. So obviously he was trying to make a cup of shoe piss tea, which drink, alongside eating a bag of dog poo, a cup of shoe piss tea.
A little tip, if a fox pisses in your shoes and you don't want to throw them out, which is definitely what I should have done, you have to submerge them in passata.
You know, I've always wondered, like, what is passata for? That's why serving suggestion is a picture of a piss sodden shoe on the front, isn't it? With an Italian man pouring.
Yeah, that's why you'll often find Dolmio in the shoe care section of your supermarket. Does it count as animal husbandry when you're talking about domesticating pets? Like dogs aren't natural. Like, we've bred in all those traits.
Yeah, a lot of dogs have functions that you didn't know about. So, you know, like a spaniel
DVD player.
DVD player, but increasingly now wireless charging.
It's very distressing. Very distressing when you see a lovely Great Dane who's got, you know, its obsolete DVD player on its haunch.
I know, it's so sad. And sometimes that'll be it'll be playing Marley and Me or a sad dog film on that DVD, which makes it even more sad. But to watch it stuck on the menu system of an old fashioned DVD with the sound just going round.
Because you've lost the remote.
You've lost the remote. And the idea that you'd get excited by, you know, DVD extras, it's just sad to watch now.
Yeah.
Very, very sad.
What upgrades did you get with Pam, Mike? Or did you just go for stock?
Pam. 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 Good girl, Pam. The good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam. Pam, 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 no, no, Pam, Pam, Pam. She's leather upholstered in the interior.
Oh, good. Yeah.
As we tell people she is, yeah.
She's got dash cams.
That's nice. But I did notice, Mike, she's got a few sort of smooth areas where there could have been an extra. For example, there could have been a handle. She could have had the side handle.
Yeah. We decided not to go for those, but we did keep the ashtray.
Yeah.
It's actually quite hard to get these days.
Because the most advanced version of Pam you can get has a handle on the top and it's got a strap so you can wear her as a rucksack.
Yeah. And wheels on the bottom. Yeah, she's a carry-on dog.
It's a holiday carry-on dog.
Yeah. And any liquid, she can sort of barf out liquids into small plastic bags. So they can be properly assessed.
Yeah.
And put back in again. Bloody expensive, but worth it.
And you've got one of those little Christmas tree things hanging, dangling around her anus, haven't you? You hang that off the bottom. There's a little hook on the bottom.
It's not enough. And those Christmas tree things have never been enough.
No, they've never been enough
to do anything other than to tell you that the driver of this car has a flatulence issue. That's it. That's their only purpose.
It's true.
Crack a window, mate.
It does the opposite of what it's supposed to do. Is it just draws your attention to the smell. Whereas previously you might have got in that car and got out of the thing thinking either this car smells, it could be my shoulders are smelling, or it could be my... I might have smelly...
Maybe I farted.
Maybe I'm farting all the time. I took a taxi ride the other day because I was late at night. I got into a station. There was no other way of getting home. And there was no Ubers. So that's something I hardly ever do now, which is get an old-fashioned black cab. But I'm going to enjoy this, I thought. I'm going to get in. There's quite a lot of legroom. I'll feel a bit... You know, it's like this is like special... You know, this will be a little treat. Mm-hmm. Close the door. It absolutely stank. Yeah. And...
Of?
Well, I don't know exactly.
Oh.
But it smelt like? It's actually, weirdly, it smelt like a huge dog had been in there.
Doing what?
Just being not being well.
Okay.
Sort of on a mixture of on heat and at death's door. So it was quite, it's just absolutely stank. And I was like, as we were pulling away from the station, Victoria, I thought, I want this to be a nice experience. This is going to cost me loads. I want to sit and enjoy it. And this stinks. And I wanted to say to the guy, look, I'm really sorry. Do you mind just letting me off? I'll get the next one because it stinks in here. Mm. but you know what I did? And this is training our international listeners, something to bear. And good old-fashioned British solution. Do you know what I did?
You stuck it out?
Stuck it out. And had a really, really unpleasant sort of 25-minute drive.
And said thank you very much. And
said thank you very much.
All of your earnings from the day.
Correct.
Yeah.
Somebody emailed us, Henry, with a recommendation of a jingle that needs to be made.
Okay.
That refers to what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
This is from Kim from Stockholm.
Ooh.
She said, I'd like to throw out a jingle idea. A jingle for Henry's glamorous upper crust life in London.
Oh, yes.
A metropolitan elite Henry jingle in contrast to the provincial dad Mike jingle.
That's a good idea.
I think it's quite a good idea.
Yes. Well, that would be a good time for it, wouldn't it? Because that was me.
Getting a smelly taxi.
Well, we've got listeners all over the world who could only dream of getting a smelly taxi.
Yeah.
So what do you think about doing a sort of metropolitan elite-based jingle?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I agree. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, let's do one.
Soho. Battersea. Old Southwark. Streatham. Vauxhall. Tufnell Park.
Barnet, technically.
Madame Two Swords.
The Cenotaph.
Halfords. Zone 5.
Mind the gap between your provincial existence and this metropolitan utopia. Next stop, urban enlightenment.
The glamorous London life of Henry Packer.
Hang on a second. Is that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? No, it can't be. Because you're Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. I know!
So, that's Animal Husbandry.
Yes, thank you, Michael.
Okay, time to read your emails. At the end of the last series, We mentioned that maybe if you wanted to, you could send in your kind of cover versions of some of our more well-used jingles. And someone has.
Oh, really?
This is from Elizabeth Smith.
So we've been inundated with this one, have we?
No, we've had a few. Some people have kind of got the brief slightly wrong in that they've made their own jingles that are completely unrelated to the ones that I created.
That's exciting. It's exciting, or do you feel a bit territorial about that?
I do feel a bit territorial about it.
Yeah. Also, you've got to be able to follow a brief, haven't you? Stick to a brief. Think about what we do with the topics you send us, for example.
Yeah. So thanks to everyone who sent all this stuff in. Going for the first one we got is from Elizabeth Smith, and I really like this one. So it's a version of the email jingle. She writes, it's a slightly darker take on the email jingle. What I like about this, before we listen to it, is that it's like she took the original email jingle and then fed it through both some kind of computer and also a kind of maverick yet highly regarded European academic / philosopher in the field of nihilism. You'll see what I mean when you listen to this. It's like a deconstructed version of it.
Oh, wow.
It's taken back to its essence, I would say.
All right. Should we go for it?
You have received mail. Give me your hoof.
My beautiful horse.
Oh, wow.
Very solid work, isn't it?
That's fantastically good.
That was extraordinary.
Oh, well done.
I haven't got any reference points for what that was. What was that? What just happened? I felt like that's...
It was like going to the other side, somehow. The dark underbelly of Ben's music.
It felt quite dark, but it felt quite... illegal Soviet Eastern European underground sex club.
Yeah.
You know, like, or Berlin, a sort of Berlin basement where you go...
Berlin on the cusp of war, just when things are getting really weird and bad.
Yeah. But also, it's that feeling of going into a basement and going, God, I thought I was open-minded, but I'm not sure if I'm actually... Bloody hell, some of the stuff that's going in, I mean, I just wanted to have a pint with some friends, but... I think myself as quite a cool guy, but some of the stuff I saw in that room just there.
But you discover that Steve is actually really into it and has been for a while.
Well,
and
into
hoping
it.
That you'll do some stuff that you're really not ready for.
And
at
I'm,
all.
I'm not. I think I'm just more of a traditional.
And it's never going to be the same when you see Steve ever again.
No.
No, and I've got a very, very strong feeling that I need to go and just watch the Antiques Roadshow for a few hours. Yeah. Maybe have a Kit Kat.
Yeah. And maybe, is it possible to get one of those baths that they put sheep in, but for people that chemically cleans the sort of. Chemically
your
rinses your whole body or your whole brain. You can dip your brain in
a brain dip.
A brain dip.
I love a brain dip.
A sheep brain
oh
dip.
I'd love a brain dip.
Yeah, it felt like a very it felt like Eastern European industrial club techno set but what's it sensual but at the same time very very out there extreme sexual sexual sort of leisure acts.
Sexual leisure acts.
If you ever see sexual leisure acts written onto someone's calendar on the front of their fridge, just get out. Don't wait for your teeth to cool down. Just get out.
Welcome to the club, sir. Listen, in 1 hour's time, you are not going to believe this, but it is true that no horses will have been hurt in what happens to you. And it's going to be very, very hard for you to believe that, but it's actually true.
Is that sort of club? Brilliant work. It's absolutely superb. I don't know if I could listen to it again. It's like, it also reminded me a bit of a horror film, like, you know, that you watch it and a bit quite early doors, you're like, this is actually too much for me. I can't deal with it. I felt like that halfway through that jingle. I don't know if I can handle this, actually. But it's
very intense.
But it's really good. Right. Well done.
Like all the terrible things you've ever done condensed into one sort of little lump of matter that you've been put on a cracker and you've been asked to eat it.
Yeah. Put it this way. If it's true that before you die, you see a short film of your life, if that is true, and if that's the soundtrack to it,
oh,
you are
You're going down.
You're going down.
You're bound for hell, my friend.
You're going down, my friend. You're taking the service elevator to...
to Beelzebub City.
To Beelzebub City. And you deserve it.
Right. Well, thank you for that. And we've had a few different ones. And yeah, if you fancy doing a cover version of one of our jingles, then by all means, go for it.
And so Ben, just quick, tell me, will you have played that? Are you going to play that in instead of the email jingle today? Or do we just refer to them as sort of just play them and talk them through as if we might have used them? Is this a kind of, like alternate histories where they go, what would have happened if at the Battle of Hastings, all the Anglo-Saxons were all driving modern Range Rovers?
Basically, what you're saying is it sounds like someone needs to make a bad Pompidou jingle, right? Or there's been a bad Pompidou.
That's what I'm saying. And I think...
Oh, so you're saying that if we were to use that jingle we just heard, we'd end up going to like an alternative version of the emails where all of the emails are kind of evil and...
It's all bollocking.
Sinister.
The dark web beans. No, no, I didn't mean that. I know, I'm just wondering, you've asked people to send in their versions of jingle. Does that mean you'll use that? Will that be played in as the email jingle? Or is it us talking about... You know, what that would have been like had that been the email jingle. Am I over?
So hang on. Are you worried that we're not going to play... Where the audience are going to listen to us listening to a jingle which they will never hear?
Yes. No, but... Or will we play it? Will you play it in?
Oh, God.
I think this is such a small distinction you're making.
Can I suggest, Henry?
Let's move on. I haven't...
Try not to worry about it. Just wait and see what Ben does in the edit.
Okay,
and
fine.
Then you'll have your answer.
All right. Go for it. Carry on.
This week, Elizabeth's version of the email jingle is the email jingle.
Ah, okay, fine.
Yeah.
You're not just saying that. Okay. No, I'm with you. I'm going to take my jumper off. I think I'm too hot.
I think that's a problem, yeah.
I think Elizabeth's jingle has made him heat up.
Go on. Sorry, crack on.
Okay, so we've had an email. We've had lots of emails about lots of different things, but we've had a number of emails about the old phrase, you can't sit on your own arse.
Oh, guys, I fucking stop recording.
Oh, how? When?
When?
Just, I don't think we've got, I've recorded any of the emails, sorry. Are we doing Zoom? That whole chunk, sorry.
Well, I can use the backup from Zoom.
We've got Zoom, backup. I do apologize. I don't know why. Did we do the
you're
one?
Recording now?
No.
I'd start recording.
Yeah, I'm just going to press record.
Are you recording, Henry?
I am recording, yeah, sorry.
Okay.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou. I'm really sorry. We lost some bit of recording there by me, sorry. So the sound quality would have gone down there.
But
not that much. We'd use the backup Zoom recording. The reason is because... I press save during the record and it stops the whole bloody thing, turns out. Can we move on? Okay, go on.
Emily emails. Dearest Beans, I had to drop you a line as I'm currently giggling too loudly while in our kitchen listening to my husband on his daily Zoom team meeting for IBM.
Ooh.
So she's got a high-rolling husband there.
Big hitter, yeah.
Oh, well done. He sounds like he's hilarious.
Henry,
sorry,
really.
Don't get me on IBM.
Henry.
Don't get me on IBM. You know, I've got beef. Don't. IBM is one of those companies. It's like, have they either not been in business since 1987 or are they still absolutely massive? I couldn't tell you.
I don't know. I assume this email was from the 80s. I was quite excited.
Yeah, it sounds like it's from the 80s, doesn't it? Yeah. Nice.
So Emily writes, hubby has always been so suggestible when it comes to word porridge. So I decided to take advantage of this and drop the phrase, you can't sit on your own arse, into conversation as often as I could without seeming too conspicuous. Mm. The big news is that I've just witnessed him using the phrase to 12 of his IBM colleagues.
No.
And some nice. International seniors.
Brilliant.
Very good. Very good.
Well, this is how...
The corporate
we've got it into the corporate world.
Trickle down. That's what we want. Because that's what we've...
Trickle up.
Well, trickle up.
Then trickle back down.
Trickle around the houses. This is what we want, isn't it? We want to get it out there. So this could be
well,
a huge...
I want to get to a stage where if you buy a new IBM computer, which I'm not sure is possible, when it...
or
when
an antique when code.
When it boots up, it just says on the screen, you can't sit on your own ass.
You can't sit on your own. Yeah.
She writes, the context was bizarre, but you may enjoy it as much as I did. And then she's included a kind of a script of what happened.
Mm.
He said, I love the fact that this is what he said, but it sounds so much like boilerplate corporate talk that you would just put in like a really poorly written drama.
Well, you'd put it in the first scene of one of the Christmas films that I am addicted to on Amazon.
Yes.
They've always got those that in the first scene. Yeah.
So he said, I could add another update for the next quarter.
Oh, very good.
Which is boilerplate corporate nonsense.
Doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
So he said, I could add another update for the next quarter, but right now I can't even sit on my own arse.
Oh, interesting use.
They all laughed.
Interesting.
Suggesting he's quite senior in the meeting.
Yeah. What, that they had to laugh?
Yeah. Because there's no way they could have understood what he meant. Because I don't understand what he means.
No. I mean, it's a generic... Basically, what that bit of dialogue is an entirely generic bit of sort of pseudo-corporate chat followed by a completely meaningless phrase that we've invented.
It's totally possible that your husband is pretending to work for IBM.
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
That Zoom call didn't actually happen.
So a couple of little checks you might want to do. One is Google IBM. Does it still exist? Because we don't think it does.
It feels a bit rum.
For example, London's Regent Street has a large, sparkling and beautiful clean lines in its Apple store. It does not have an IBM store. There's no IBM store on Regent Street. I've never seen an IBM store in London.
And when you've got a minute, try and see how many places his laptop bends. It should only bend in one place. If it's more than one place, it's made of cardboard. It's not a real laptop.
That's right. If your hands go through it, it could be made of cake. in which case,
Well, his hat's off to him if he's managed to ice 12 colleagues onto the screen in detail. That's, you know, he's in the wrong job. Well, he's not in a job at the moment.
Well, he's in the wrong fake job.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope he does work for IBM, because if that's true, it's excellent that phrase is spreading through the corporate world.
Well, weirdly, that phrase has managed to exist in a sentence where it's the most convincing bit of that sentence, if you see what I mean. Like it's the first bit, the bit about the financial quarter, to me, is the bit which has alarm bells all over it.
So, I mean? And hopefully his colleagues, his already sort of English-speaking colleagues from Portugal are sort of trying to Google this phrase and work out exactly what that meant.
Because it's up there with, I want the Johnson report on my desk by 9 a.m. Friday.
And none of those elements exist, of course.
None of those exist. All at 9 a.m. Friday, Johnson report. None of those are real things. It's also things like, I'm really nervous about the presentation on Friday. That's another one that's not true. That can't happen. Mm-hmm. another good one is, I want these reports yesterday. That kind of thing.
Is it possible, Henry, that the two of them are, maybe not even knowing, living inside a Hallmark Christmas movie? The way they'll know this is if next week the opportunity comes up for them to buy a Christmas tree farm. That will be...
Yep.
If that happens, you know...
Or they inherit a Christmas tree farm from a maiden aunt that none of them knew existed.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Also, has Emily... did she have a promising career in either the business sector or the medical sector or academia, which her husband encouraged her to stop because, of course, she'd be much better off... mainly just decorating Christmas, making rooms look Christmassy, as her main focus in life, not pursuing a career and just hanging around with her husband and her husband's mum and dad, in the small Christmas themed town that her husband lives in.
So this film is a psychological horror.
Well, yeah, essentially. I mean, that's what those films are, basically.
Oh. Exciting. So we've corporate sector. We've got an inroad. Science, we've got an inroad with our previous emailer.
Yeah, I think it could work quite well in the corporate world. You can't sit on your own arse.
So we've got two sectors we're in. We need someone now in politics.
Guys, so Mike, you mentioned politics.
Mm.
We've had an email from Safia.
Okay.
Dear Beans, I wanted to let you know that your arseforism, you can't sit on your own arse, may soon be immortalised... in Hansard.
Oh, Hansard. For international listeners, that is the annals of the Houses of Parliament. God save the King.
it's a sort of almanac of parliamentary business.
Mm.
And let me tell you, it is absolutely riveting.
It's a real page turner.
One of the best.
Safia says, I've been invited to speak to a committee in Parliament next week about my research into climate change and feel this will be an opportune moment to give the phrase a wider airing. After all, when it comes to saving the planet, none of us can sit on our own arse.
Well, we won't have our own arse pretty soon.
Oh, Safia. I mean, I don't wish to undermine the potential seriousness of that subcommittee meeting, but
that's brilliant
news. You're just a hop, skip and a jump away from the OED after Hansard, aren't you?
That's massive. God, that's exciting.
Okay, let us know how that goes, Safia. Let us know if you, I don't know. I mean, I'd understand, but if you have the metal to see that through, I'll be impressed.
If we can watch it on BBC Parliament, that would be pretty good. Last one from Chris. In a conversation about arses with my non-bean-listening wife, I casually dropped in, well, you know what they say, you can't sit on your own arse. And without missing a beat, she retorted, and no one will do it for you.
Ooh. Call and response. And that, I mean, that's lovely.
He writes, I can only assume that after the tireless work of your listeners, the phrase has permeated into our shared cultural knowledge, and in doing so has evolved its own comeback too.
Yes.
Well done all.
That's very good.
We've gone full see later alligator, potentially. Or maybe it's too soon to say that.
But that's good. So yeah,
one can hope.
That's the official response is, and no one will do it for you.
So do some phrases have a call and response, do they?
Well, see you later, alligator. In a while, crocodile.
Up yours. Fuck up, what are you on about? That's what I said.
Is that not the... It's the two classic examples.
Yeah, it's like, up yours, what the fuck are you on about? In a while, are there any others that have... That's the only phrase, isn't it, that has one? Well, hello. There's hello and hello. that's a nice traditional one, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Maybe there aren't any.
Isn't there "see you soon, big baboon" as well?
I don't think so. No,
there is now.
There wasn't.
I used to know someone that said that. You'd go, "see you later, alligator." Someone else go, "in a wild crocodile," and then he'd come in and go, "see you soon, big baboon."
I think he was trying to do a sit on your own ass type thing.
He was trying to get one going.
Yeah.
But no one said that in the House of Commons.
No. Because when it comes to the world's rainforests, pretty soon, we're not going to be able to see you soon, big baboon, or any other species that live there. Goodbye. That'd be quite a good way to... Hello?
We know what you say. You can't sit on your own huge, distended blue arse. Big thanks, as always, to everyone who signed up at our Patreon.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/3beansalad for ad-free episodes and for bonus episodes and all the goodness. And, of course, if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Sure was.
Well, it was the it was a really fun event, wasn't it? It was the
piling lots of books on top of each other ball.
It was. Here's my report.
Lumber support belts with discreet pockets for library cards finally had their moment in the sun yesterday in the build-up to the Sean Bean Lounge piling lots of books on top of each other ball. Sean Bean himself wasn't available to open the event as he claimed he was still on his month off. A month off that at no point has he given a clear reason for really needing particularly. And so cutting the ribbon fell to Cormac in Bristol. Cormac having decisively won Sean Bean's recent anagram competition with almost 3 anagrams of the words Sean Bean. Lindsay McShay impressed the judges with a 14-foot-high pile of Lonely Planet shoestring guides from continental Europe and Central America, and was evenly matched by Matt Cote with his complete works of Barry Norman. Corey Cloyne's pile measured a jaw-dropping 79 foot, but was found to consist of over the allowed 6% metres per inch of back issues of Guitar Techniques magazine, and so his pile was disqualified and steeplejacked back down to sea level. Victoria Jenkins became too absorbed in her set of teach-yourself piling books on top of other books, timed out, tried to beat the system by throwing the book she was reading as high as possible, which wasn't recommended in any of her books, and in so doing knocked over Carl Alford's Jelly Cooper Henge. Tom Hughes went for the wow factor by piling up the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which he'd had translated into Middle English before being read aloud by Stephen Fry, whose reading was transcribed by James, none of my family knows my real job is Stephen Fry's amanuensis, Ringer, before being printed on 80 GSM printer paper and bound in fish leather. Tragically, the pile came to only a paltry 9 inches. For a while, it looked like Anthony Bosker's pile of rare Hebridean erotica he claimed he'd borrowed from Jesse Plemons would take the pile height trophy at a whopping 43 yards. Were it not for Stan Wenham's strategically brilliant choice of piling every Grisham that's been made into a film, which is most of them probably and certainly most films, onto a gargantuan plinth of Stephen King's. For the first time, the ceiling of the Sean Bean Lounge had to be punched through, and the pile was deemed so weighty and dangerously unstable that the book pile dance itself had to be cancelled and all Sean Bean loungers evacuated on tiptoe. The emergency services have also cleared the area in a 3-mile radius of the Sean Bean Lounge of all residents, pets, and ceramic garden ornaments. Thanks all.
Okay, and now we'll finish the show with one of your versions of our theme tune. This week we're going to go for one from Connor.
Thank you, Connor. This is Connor. This is the Connor.
Yeah, this is the
Connor. No way.
Oh, I love a bit of Connor.
Also, someone else emailed us saying... basically going, you do know Connor's famous, don't you?
What? It's not Connor Hernandez, is it?
Former president of Costa Rica.
I thought he'd been quiet for a while on the political scene.
Come volleyball impresario.
No, somebody said, so his name's Connor. He doesn't give his full name to us, normally. But someone said, oh, it's Connor so-and-so. He's in a band and he's like a... He's a music guy.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
No.
We knew he was a music guy, but we're saying he's a pro music guy.
But I also wonder whether Connor would like us to keep, wouldn't like us to tell everyone.
Maybe
that.
Not. I assume he would have said if he wanted us to.
So we won't say what the name of his band is, but if you want us to let everyone know, Connor, let us know.
Yeah.
Well, he's a very fine Connor, whichever way you look at it.
I'm not going to say explicitly who Connor is, but let's just say he isn't not Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
What's he got for us this time? I'm excited.
So he says, this is my fifth theme submission, and as such, it has become apparent that my life is a shambles.
Classic Sheeran.
However, I remain undeterred in my quest to destroy the majority of my close relationships by opting to spend all of my spare time composing variations of your theme song.
It's true. The other members of the band Coldplay must be absolutely livid with him. The amount of time he's spending... working on this. Not that we're saying he's in Coldplay. We're not saying that, are we?
No. But it does explain what Gwyneth was saying to me on the phone a few years ago. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah.
I don't know what genre this is. I originally intended to give Henry a break and have the saxophone take center stage in place of the guitar.
Mm.
However, upon re-listening to your first ever episode's posters, in which Henry refers to guitar enthusiasts as, I quote, dull bastards.
That's not true. I don't use that kind of talk.
I immediately added an extended guitar solo out of pure spite.
Good on you, Connor. Good on you. Oh, no. What's he done now?
Oh, fuck. I've stopped recording again.
Oh, God.
Sorry, all kinds of shit. My computer's done that thing where it crashes.
Right.
It might be that me and Mike can get to the end of this.
Yeah,
this
is good. Let's get rid of Henry, because Henry's not going to enjoy this anyway. So this is the spirit of the guitar at work here. So you say a little goodbye on the bad Zoom record, Henry.
Bye, everyone. It feels like I've deliberately crashed my computer, but hasn't it?
Yeah. He's tried to sabotage the whole thing, but it hasn't worked.
He also writes a PS. PS, if you ever wanted someone to introduce Ben and Mike onto the stage at a live show or to play you off, my guitar is ready.
Holy moly.
He also says, I'm willing to play Henry on or off as well, but only if I can use a damaged kazoo.
And I've crashed. I can't even have my say.
Well, we can use the backup Zoom recording so we can...
Well,
but it does undermine your response hugely, though.
Yeah.
Up yours, you dull bastard.
Yeah. You went quite route one for that one.
Yeah, I went quite route one.
Thank you, Connor. Very excited about this. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Welcome back.
Bye.